Danger. The emergency destruct system is now activated.
Cake and grief counseling will be available at the conclusion of the test.
She's alive! Alive!
Maybe you should put some shorts on or something if you want to keep fighting evil today.
Why not just put a stake through her heart?
She's not a vampire.
Well, you'd be surprised how many things that'll kill.
We are now seeing the beginnings of another stage of human evolution. At last, we can retire and give up this life of crime.
You and your training wheels.
Hailing frequencies are open.
Hello, sweetie.
Commencing countdown. T-5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to the Skiffy and Fanti Show, a Shoot the Wiz subcast. I'm Sean.
I'm Rachel.
And we have a special guest today. We have Damian Angelica Walters. Hello, Damian.
Hello.
So we invited you on this show because somebody whispered in my ear that you are a giant Aliens fan.
Just a little.
Just a little bit. And so for this first episode, we're actually going to cover the first two films in the original Aliens quadrilogy, which is now like 18,000 films because you have Aliens vs. Predator and all that whatever nonsense. But we're just going to cover Alien and Aliens this time around. And so I actually want to start with not so much general reactions, because I think but at this point, everybody's seen this movie or they know about it. If they've not seen it, they've heard everything under the sun about Alien or Aliens. So we'll start with Alien. But instead of sort of general reactions, talking about actually the impact the film has had on us, I thought that would be a great place to start, and then we'll dive into the actual film. And so I want to start with the person who is the uber-duper fan, which is you, Damian. So just kind of tell us a little bit about your journey with this film, as it were.
Okay, I saw it for the first time when I was 11. Now, I didn't know anything about the movie. My father didn't know anything about the movie. So we go to the theater, and I was terrified. It's the scene when Brett walks into the one area with the chains and the water. I couldn't take it anymore, and we left. Because I begged my father to leave. And then over the course of the next week, I could not get the movie out of my head. I wanted to know how it ended. So I had to promise my father that it didn't matter how scared I was, that I would remain there in the theater, even if I was covering my ears and my eyes. So we went back and I fell in love with it. And it scared me just as much the second time, but, you know, I had made a promise and I wanted to know how the movie ended. And I probably had nightmares. I would assume I did. However, I don't know of any other film that has affected me in that way.
That's incredible. I didn't see that. I wasn't old enough to see this. I think I was like 6. No, I wasn't even born. Oh my god.
Yeah, I was gonna say you weren't even born because the movie is older than me, and you're a youngin.
Yeah, that's right. I'm sorry. I was 3, I think, when the other one came out, Aliens. But this one, I was not born yet. So I didn't see this one until I was much older. So the film that I recall having to leave because I got so scared and was about to pee myself was actually Jurassic Park. Which, to this day, still scares me a lot, but not as much because I'm a little bit older. But I had that same experience. I didn't actually see Alien until after I had seen Aliens when I was, I think, like 10. And Aliens scared the pants off me because it was giant aliens and acid, blood, and all these kinds of things. But then I went back and saw Alien, and it's one of those films that is just so iconic. And so I didn't have quite the same experience, but it is one that you can't see this film and not realize how great it really is, I think is what I would say. What about you, Rachel?
I don't know how old I was when I saw it. I have a feeling, I think I saw it after I saw Aliens. And I saw it and it scared the shit out of me. And I don't like horror movies. We've gone over this many times. So I actually saw it just the once. And then I was like, for this podcast, I was like, shit, I have to watch it again. And I watched it like at, 9:30 at night last night when there was a thunderstorm going on outside, which was a great life choice. And I mean, the kind of interesting thing is that on finally having watched it again, and I don't particularly want to regularly view it because I don't like horror movies, it actually is not as scary as I remember it being. But I was also able to pay a lot more attention to just how thoughtfully it is shot, because it is a beautifully put together film. And in that way, I mean, Alien, I would say, like, from a stance of, like, shots and editing and sound editing, Alien is a very superior film to Aliens in that fashion. And frankly, it's a freaking terrifying horror movie. And then, we'll talk more about Aliens later, obviously, but I still like Aliens better just because I don't like horror movies. But I can appreciate Alien very much from an aesthetic standpoint because it is just a very well-made film.
So this actually I wanted to raise this point, and then we can kind of dive into maybe some specific things, because this film was made or released in 1979, which means it is over 30 years old. It is a very old film, and yet when I watch it, one of the things I deliberately sought out to figure out was, does this film still hold up? And I think it still does. I would argue that it does. I can see where, and what you're saying, Rachel, about the editing, that if they had gone with a more liberal choice in terms of how much of the alien they had shown, it would have flopped in terms of the distance and time, because you can tell how limited the puppetry is in this.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, a lot of the shots of the alien are not a puppet. It's a guy in a latex suit.
That's what I mean. Like, it's, yeah, you could tell the limitations of that suit he's in.
Yeah. Right?
It's not, they're not as mobile as we get in Aliens. And so I think they're deliberately careful with how much they show of the alien at any moment in time. Like, when they show the full body, it's in very limited scenes, and oftentimes they focus on just small pieces of the body, like the face, which they can kind of give a little bit more like animatronic feel to it. I think if they had gone with a very different choice where they wanted to give more of that sort of horrific image, to give that H.R. Giger terror look just constantly, it would fail, because I don't think that the effects hold up nearly as well. But because they're so deliberate in how little they show, it does hold up as a film, I think. I don't know if you guys agree with that, but maybe Damon, if you wanted to jump in maybe with your thoughts on that.
Yes, I believe that's why it was effective. Now, before we started recording, we were talking about the director's cut. There, more of the alien is shown in the scene with Brett. And it's too much. It's kind of at that point, everything is mystery, and sometimes what you don't see is much scarier because you're going to imagine it. And at that point, you didn't know how big the alien was. Brett found the skin, the shed piece of skin, but you got a snippet of how big. And then later, when Parker says it was big, it was like a man, huge. You're imagining it. You don't have the full picture. And the imagination is always scarier. There's, the monster that you can conjure is always bigger and more frightening. But when in the theatrical release, you're given little bits and pieces, enough to know, okay, it's got two mouths. It's got really long fingers, it's stealthy, and it's deadly, and it could be anywhere. I mean, when Dallas is going through the air shafts, I mean, they're small. So you've got this creature that we already know from the scene with Brett, we know that it's significant, that it's big, and yet it can travel with ease through air shafts. And I might be getting off on a tangent.
Oh, no, that's fine. Yeah.
you know, it's, I think that the scene at the very end, when you see, you can actually see that it's a man in a suit, and I can't remember the actor's name. That is almost a letdown, because you can tell it's a man in a suit. And the true power came from not seeing it in full. However, at the end, Ripley has gained the power. So showing it and revealing it and it being obvious that it's a man in a suit, it loses its power. But at that point, the alien has also lost the power and Ripley holds it.
Ooh, that's very interesting. I hadn't actually thought about that before in that particular scene. Because you're right, that's the first time we really get its full entire bulk. Mm-hmm. And it is actually almost like an infant, right? It's essentially helpless in that moment. It's not literally helpless. It gives the appearance of being helpless. So you're right that it does seem to lose its power. Maybe in that respect, it's part of what makes Ripley so capable at the moment of being so deliberate and slow as she sort of gears up to just chuck it out the airlock. That's what is that fact that she's seeing this thing as almost though it's like a baby, which I guess literally it is, because it's only, what, like a day old.
Wow.
It's a big baby, though. A big, very hungry baby. I did want to add, too, and then I'll shut up, and Rachel, if you'd like to jump in, or Damien, that you're right, too, about, like, when the people are being killed, how much we actually see of the deaths is often very limited, with the exception, obviously, of the most gory scene, which I'm sure we'll talk about with the chest burster. But I think, like, in terms of when other characters are being sort of manhandled by the alien and, like, it's using its mouth to kill them, a lot of times we don't get a full idea of what it's actually doing to them physically. And I found that to be much more effective as a horror mechanism than if they had, like, just shown the alien ripping them limb from limb and, like, having it being super gory. Just the idea that I'm looking at someone's face and I know that this alien's, like, eating out their chest, right? That, to me, is far more horrifying than watching it actually happen. And I think that just kind of goes along with what your point was. But in any case, I will shut up. Rachel, did you want to jump in, or Damien, did you want to go?
Well, I mean, I would agree with you that it is... The horror movies that always mess me up way more are the ones that don't show a lot of stuff. Like, part of the reason I don't like horror movies is I don't like really gory stuff for the most part, just because it's gross. And a lot of American horror movies in particular tend to go more with, like, the gore and the shock kind of horror. But the ones that stick with me and really freak me out are the ones like Alien, where you're like, I know a thing happened. They didn't show me what happened. So now I'm imagining what happened. And it really is like your imagination is a million times worse, because your subconscious knows what you personally are more afraid of. So it supplies that for you. And I mean, that was, I think, part of the genius of the movie, is that it is shot like a very good, you know, it is a very good horror movie, the way it's shot, where it's just like, I'm just going to show you just enough to imply what is going on, and then you get to fill everything else in, because that just makes it worse. I mean, and okay, I got to say, like, at the very end, when you know, she's tried to shut off the self-destruct and it didn't work, and then she's like, you know, because And she'd left the cat behind, and you just have that shot of the alien looking into the box where the cat is.
Oh, God,
I was
yeah.
shitting myself, because I forgot that the cat lived, and I was like, no, Jones!
Oh my God, you're right. Yeah, because every time I hate animals getting killed.
Yeah.
I don't know why it is, but the idea of, like, a dog or a cat being killed in a movie, it just, that just kills me every time. Like, I don't know what it is, but that moment, you're right, because that the alien, and I'm just like, I know this cat lives, but oh my God, get away from the cat.
That cat had a rough time, though. I was kind of talking to my housemate last night, where I was like, depending on how you want to read this movie, it could be that Jones is a very, very bad cat, and he is deliberately trying to get most of the crew killed. Because he leads a couple of them to their deaths. Maybe he's, like, in cahoots with the alien. I don't know.
Well, the alien never does kill him, so that's possible.
Maybe he's just like, if you let me live, I will show you where the tasty big people are. I will bring them to you. I wouldn't put it past a cat. Cats are furry little assholes.
So why don't we get to some specifics, because we're getting close about the 15-minute mark, and we've set ourselves a max of 30 minutes per movie so we can cover these. But why don't we get to some of the specifics, and I figure since we've already mentioned it, and I'll start with you, Damien, why don't we talk about the chestburster scene?
All right. You know, it's funny that I've seen the movie more times than I want to admit. Probably over 200 times. I still, when Kane starts choking, I get tense. I know what's coming. There's no question. I mean, I find that as far as the way the movie has built up tension, which still it has not lessened for me, no matter how many times that I've seen it. In that scene, and maybe it's residual, maybe I'm calling back to when I was 11, the absolute terror of having never seen anything like that. And then just the concept. There is something inside me, and it's not me, and it wants out. And it's has decided to take this route through the chest. It still is such an effective scene. I mean, I think possibly because it was something totally unlike what had been done, I don't know of any scene in any movie since that has that same impact, that same absolute horror as when you see the blood on Kane's shirt and then you see it start to rise, but you don't know what it looks like. It's that moment of, oh, this is not good. This is really horrible. And he's still alive and the pain. And then it appears and it's like the tension is so, there's so much of it that I won't say that I forget to breathe, but I still find myself, you know, I'll be sitting straighter. If I was slouched on the sofa, I find that, you know, my back is straightened and maybe I'm holding on to the arm of the sofa. And at this point, it shouldn't. I mean, I've seen it so many times. I should be able to watch it. Sorry.
Oh, are you, I thought you were finishing a sentence, so I didn't want to jump in. Oh, I wanted to add one quick fact for those that don't remember. That particular scene contains what is considered to be an ad-lib moment at which the explosion of blood that occurs in the scene, the actors were not aware that it was going to be so much. That scene is essentially, their reactions are like genuine. They're kind of mortified by how much blood gets sprayed on them. So we get that genuine emotion there of actual terror, I think. Damien?
Yes, the actor Veronica Cartwright, who played Lambert, they didn't realize that they all knew the alien was coming, but they didn't have the details. But all of that blood that shot on her, that was not planned. So her freaking out was a genuine reaction to, I am now covered in fake blood, even though she knew it was fake. And they left it in because it really looked like somebody who was absolutely terrified.
Well, and I'm sure if, you know, she was probably in the moment and in the scene, so, you know, might as well have been real blood at that point.
Yeah, I mean, probably really difficult to detach yourself. You know, I mean, I could think anyone would have that experience, right? Like, it's fake blood, and then I'm going to throw it in your face. And then I think most people would have a reaction where the reality and the fantasy in our minds don't quite separate. But, and Damien, you had an interesting point when we were talking off podcast about the music in this particular moment.
Yes, if you listen, And, you know, depending on if you listen in a quiet room and you have speakers fairly loud, you can hear the music as a heartbeat. Even after the alien has, you know, emerged from Kane and has taken off across the table and disappeared, you've got everyone standing in the room looking absolutely shocked, and the music is, it's a heartbeat. And it just, it's sort of the perfect end for that scene. Because there's no great, you know, you look at sometimes movies will have the big sweeping score. I think the quiet and just that steady beat just enhances the horror, the absolute horror.
Agreed. Totally agree. That scene is iconic for a reason, because it still is pretty darn terrifying. I never want to have an alien burst out of my chest. there are deaths that I would rather have than that. I can think of at least 10, which I won't list because we don't have time, but that is one of the ways I do not want to ever die, is have an alien burst out of my chest. It's just gruesome. Some of the set designs I thought were, you know, rewatching this week, I was really surprised at how detailed some of the sets were. We have the very interesting the air shafts that Dallas goes down, right, with the where they sort of like twist and close down, which I thought were really fascinating. Or even the alien ship. I mean, just this monumental, massive space that they're in, with all of the eggs and the mist. Even when they get up to the big, which we now learn are the engineers. But you might also know is just like miniature elephant man, I guess.
The space jockey.
Yeah. I mean, even that, like it's massive and it's enormously detailed. I loved the sets. I mean, obviously H.R. Giger's influence throughout the Alien franchise is significant. But they're really gorgeous. And it's something that I miss from science fiction films today, is, you know, like so much sci-fi relies on just CG and not enough on like just physical actual space. And this, I mean, it obviously is using things like matte paintings and stuff like that in order to give us a sense of distance and space, but the sets themselves are enormous and they're detailed and they feel like real places. Even the like egg section when he's, oh, that's I don't know if anyone had any particular reactions to other aspects of the sets. Go ahead.
I didn't mean to interrupt. Nostromo, before the crew wakes up, when the camera's panning through, you see the corridors. It is very utilitarian. It's very, it looks like a working ship. It does not look fancy and pretty. It looks like what you would think of. You send a crew out to space to, you know, mine ore. That's what it would look like. It would be very sparse, not super fancy, very utilitarian, and yet it's claustrophobic in a way, even though the corridors are long. It's sort of similar to, you know, the vastness of space. And when the camera pans out and you see the Nostromo from the outside, you see how big the ship is. I think that it was all designed. And when they're down on the planet and they see the alien ship and the space jockey, I think that it's purposefully, everything was designed so that the humans are very, very tiny. And the ship, the space, the planet, the alien ship are all so much bigger, which calls to, you know, man's place in the universe.
That's actually really interesting. If you think, too, the vastness of space, by comparison to what are, by, you know, actually smaller spaces, which still actually have depth they're massive spaces, like the spaceship, the Nostromo. And yet compared to the universe, it's still tiny. And compared to that, we're even tinier. right? We get increasingly smaller. Like every space that gets added to this makes us seem even smaller in the grand scheme. And even within the plot, right? We're essentially like every human on the film is meaningless outside of anything else, right? It's completely disconnected from any larger sort of thing, right? They're sort of out in the ass end of space transporting ore. Right, that the only things that they have that are connected to the real world is Mother, the computer system. But they're otherwise sort of completely detached. So it's sort of like man on their own meeting nature that they can't handle. Well, it should be nature until stupid movie came and made it dumb. But
we don't acknowledge that movie.
We don't acknowledge dumb movie. So I will continue to say it is nature, man versus nature, and man almost failing miserably against nature. And actually, when you think of the numbers game, really did lose. Rachel, did you have any thoughts on the sets or the space? Or if you have another thing you would like to jump to, that's fine too.
I mean, the sets are very, like, they're very good. And one thing I was noticing when I was watching it was that you could tell, like, the ship was a model, and it was a very detailed model. So, well, I mean, of course, nothing was going to be computer generated back then, but it was just so nice to see. There's definitely just a reality to it, and the fact that they made it, you know, a pretty like grungy, claustrophobic, for the most part, set. You know, they made it a haunted house was excellent. Though all I could think when you said, you know, man versus nature, I was like, well, man lost, woman managed to win.
Fair enough. That's a fair point, Rachel.
And actually, the one thing that did kind of charm me when I was thinking about it is if you look at the crew, the last three people alive are two women and the black guy, and then one of the women and the black guy get killed, and then it's what woman makes it to the end. Which I found rather charming.
And remember, the reason why she dies is she's paralyzed by fear.
Yep.
And he tries to essentially save her, and that's why he dies. So it's actually, I think it's very significant, because that's not what Ripley ends up doing, right? She could be paralyzed in those final moments, but she, I guess, chins up and goes for it. I don't know how else you would say it, but... Yeah, but I think that's the thing we should talk about in what little time we have to talk about this movie, which is the underlying themes of the film. I know some people, including myself, interpret this as being essentially about the allegory of pregnancy as a threat to all people, that it does this thing where anybody, it doesn't matter what gender or race or whatever you are, anybody can be impregnated and anybody can die from this. It's like this sort of horrific disease. I interpret it in that way because I think it lies in terms of the other films. It sort of resonates with what those films do with things like reproduction and the family. I don't know if other people had that similar interpretation or saw other aspects of what the film's doing with gender or what have you. Maybe we'll start with you, Rachel, and then we'll go to Damien, if that would be all right.
Okay. I mean, I don't necessarily see it specifically as about pregnancy, because I think that might actually be reading it a little too literally. I think it's definitely a movie about sexual violence.
Well, that's fair. Okay.
And I also think that I will, you know, despite the differences I might have with Ridley Scott now, I will bless him forever for, you know, taking a character that was originally supposed to be male, which is Ripley, and making that character female, because that makes all the difference in the world. And then actually the other thing I found really interesting was, when they've got that android on the crew, cause I'd completely forgotten about him. And then he like basically goes batshit and he tries to kill Ripley. Yeah. Ash. And he tries to kill Ripley I seem to remember by like rolling up a magazine and trying to choke her with it by shoving it into her mouth, which is such a like straight like such a parallel to the alien, you know, forcible penetration via mouth. Ooh. That it's just a little like
yeah, that's interesting. I hadn't thought about that before. Ian Holm, the Hobbit. Yeah, he is.
Well,
he's
thanks. I'm never going to be able to watch that the same again.
He's in Lord of the Rings. He plays Bilbo. Yeah. Oh, that's interesting. That's interesting. Well, Damien, you want to jump in here?
Yes, I would say that was, you know, you can look at that scene and say, well, wait, he's a robot, so he's very strong, as you can see in the scene later with Parker when he grabs Parker's chest. But it does. The method that he chooses to attempt to dispatch Ripley is, yes, it calls back to the alien. You know, I don't know if it, I think there is definitely a sexual violence motif, but I think more so that it's, I mean, Alien is a horror movie. It's a haunted house movie, you know, where they just happen to be in space. So the haunted house is the ship. I think that part of the effectiveness of the, say, sexual violence metaphor is that no one is safe. No one. And that, I mean, granted, and the alien with the double mouth, I mean, there are some very, you know, a sexual undercurrent. When the alien kills Parker and Lambert, and you see the alien's tail slide, you know, it goes underneath and it comes up behind Lambert. I mean,
yeah,
there's an implication that is really, really unpleasant. And it, you know, I would imagine it was intentional. It's very unsettling. Now, in my mind, it may have just been using the tail to pull her closer. I don't know, but the thought that not only in the facehugger assault, if this,
Well, it's literally a rape is what occurs, and which is a horrific image. It gets even worse, I think, in Aliens when Ripley and Newt are trapped in the room, and they're both struggling to fend off, two women struggling to fend off these machines whose only purpose is to impregnate and die. It's very visceral. I mean, there's even that moment when, I'm getting into the other film, but whatever, because that scene still sticks with me. But when Ripley it's wrapped around her neck and she's trying to hold back, and it's like little tongue penis-y thing is like coming at her.
Yeah.
Like that's the only way you can describe it, because that's the image that's occurring.
Wouldn't it be like an ovipositor?
I guess you're kind of right. It's sort of like a weird, but it's so like, just the idea, because, you know, it latches on and it forces itself into you. You can't and then once it does, like it does what it wants with you. I mean, that kind of, you know, the series, when it deals with these aliens, it constantly takes away agency, like our ability to actually have control over our bodies with these aliens, because that's the whole purpose of them. They only survive by taking control over other bodies. Mm-hmm. Which is just horrifying. Oh gosh, now I'm thinking of that thing. Oh.
Yes, the thought of that giant rubbery
tonguey tube thing.
You know, shoving its way down your throat, and it's going to keep you alive while it, you know, implants a xenomorph.
Oh.
And then when you wake up, you're gonna think everything is okay.
Well, except Ripley won't, because she knows. But poor, what the hell's his name? Oh, Blake.
Kane.
He thought he was okay.
They all did. They all did,
except Ash. I think Ash knew. Because he seemed like a sly bastard the whole time.
If you watch it, he actually, at 54 minutes in, when they're sitting and eating, you see Ash watching Kane. It's a very quick.
That's right, yeah.
And then a minute later, Kane starts choking. So, yes, I think, I'm certain, because Ash was looking at the facehugger. He was dissecting it. He, for one thing, he's an android. He's not stupid. He knew. And before, when they brought Kane back on the Nostromo and they had him in the scanner, no, it's not that scene. It's when Ripley comes in, he's got a picture up on the monitor, and you can see it's like a dark shape. He certainly knew what was going on. I think he was shocked at the way it emerged, perhaps, or maybe not shocked, surprised, or surprised by its appearance, but not nearly as much as he definitely was expecting something.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so Rachel, last thought, and then we have to move to the next movie.
Oh, okay. I mean, I was kind of wondering about Ash sort of, you know, losing his crap. Kind of what I got from it was they'd been diverted there by the Wayland Corporation because, you know, it's the same thing that continues on in the second movie. So, hey, it's a segue. Woo! Where they want to get some of the xenomorphs and bring them back in some fashion. And so they put the android in the crew to facilitate that because they were like, hey, he will be immune to the aliens because obviously there's nothing to eat there. And you know, it was like when Ripley went and was trying to find out from Mother what was going on, and that was when Ash went after her. So the impression I got was that was like his overriding mission. And, you know, it's implied then in the second movie that, you know, the programming to protect human life or something was not as strong in the older androids. But it could be that maybe, you know, androids still weren't supposed to harm people. And that might be why he went completely apeshit, because he had this directive to, you know, basically let a bunch of humans get killed by a frickin' xenomorph. But it's very weird, and then he kind of like taunts them after he gets temporarily reactivated. So I have the whole thing with the android is very odd and almost out of left field, because it's like you don't even realize he's an android until Dallas whacks him and knocks his head off.
Well, Parker does, but
oh,
well,
I'm sorry, I'll forgive Parker. You. Oh God, I'm so bad with names. I'm sorry, Parker.
So we do have to move on. We'll come back to grading the films at the very end. But I think we have to move on to Aliens now, which is the second film. A wonderful film. It is the first one that makes this less a horror film and more specifically an action film, maybe an action horror. I'm not sure if that would be the correct way to think about it, but it is absolutely an action film. It is involves military and the sort of corporate collusion with the military to some degree. All of these kinds of lovely things. Paul Reiser makes an appearance as the slimy, I guess, corporate lackey slash sort of kind of lawyer. I'm not sure what his actual job is, but he's slimy, whatever he is. I do love that. I feel so bad for Paul Reiser because, like, probably his most famous role other than the one sitcom he did is going to be this movie, and it's going to be the slimy corporatist who just nobody likes at the end. But I did find it so fascinating how these films constantly inject the sort of corporate landscape and the military industrial complex, and here that becomes even more important because he explicitly says at one point in the film, right, that the bioweapons division would just have a heyday if they had one of these xenomorphs. So the idea being that we can make millions and millions of dollars and create weapons of mass destruction, which is essentially, I think, what the aliens could be considered. They're just a little bit slower than a nuclear bomb, but infinitely more horrifying, I think, in some respects. But in any case, Damien, I want to start with you with some general reactions or any specific thing you would like to bring up about this film that we could start with.
Okay, well, I think Alien holds up better than Aliens. I love Aliens, but I think it has aged more than Alien has, which is odd given that it's the newer film. I was rewatching it today and realizing, yes, it feels more dated. I do like I like that there are a lot of scenes that call back to Alien, and I'm certain that was intentional. you know, the final scene of Ripley and Newt asleep in their you know, cryo tube emulates the end of Alien. But there are also scenes where, now granted, I watched the special edition, so there's a scene where they're, you know, in the camera's panning in the mess hall before it gets to the sleeping area. And it calls back to the opening scene in Alien. Let me see. In the very first scene, though, when we have the shuttle, and after they you know, cut open the door, when the scanner first appears, it has a similar shape to the alien, to the full-grown xenomorph, not the facehugger. I thought that was really interesting. I'd never really hadn't paid attention to in that detail that I did watching it today, and I noticed that and thought that was, I'm certain it was intentional.
That's very fascinating.
And I think it's to give an audience that bit of fear, like, okay, someone just cut open the door and what is coming through?
Yeah, again, that thematic of penetration, which seems to go through so many of them, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a horrifying way of rethinking about that scene. I need to rewatch it again. So I'll agree with you, though, that I think in some respects, Alien does hold up better than Aliens. I think in terms of how it integrates special effects, because I think at the very end when Bishop is flying the shuttle into the almost blowing up reactor, that shuttle does not integrate into that image very well. It looks really, really bad. It looks almost like, Rich will understand this, and maybe Damien, if you've seen the movie, it almost looks like a sprite from Birdemic. Sort of being inserted over the image and kind of being pushed in. I mean, a little bit better, but not by much. And I've noticed that when I watched this, and just I kind of cringed a little bit because I'm like, there's no reason that needed to be that bad. but in other respects, I think it does do things better. I mean, I think I mentioned on a podcast, or maybe I mentioned it this one, I can't remember. The aliens themselves are more mobile. It does make them a little bit more human. But I appreciate, you know, that we get to see them actually moving as sort of living creatures. So I appreciated that in terms of the kind of, it's not puppetry, but whatever you want to call it, the suits that people wear. That must have been a great job, by the way, just like wander around in alien suits scaring the shit out of people. God, I would love to get paid to do that. I think in that respect, it holds up a lot better just because those effects, I think, they don't seem to have aged for me, although the queen a little bit, and I think that's just because it is literally a giant puppet. I don't think there's a person inside the queen. I think it's a giant puppet. I think it doesn't quite move that well, but the first time you see that queen it's something else. It still is to me. That, like, I know it's coming, but every time I see that queen, I get like, I don't get scared. I get almost like goosebumps of just like pure just awe, because it's this just beautiful, monstrous, ugly, terrifying creature. And just as it looms up and we see that head come out, right, of its, mm-hmm. you know, and it kind of like, and it hisses. Oh my gosh. I just love it. It's one of the greatest reveals, I think, for me in any sci-fi movie. Like, when you realize who the real villain is, it's this giant queen laying hundreds of eggs, and she's just mean and lots of teeth. Oh, it's beautiful.
She's smart.
And she is smart, which is the thing that I think people underestimate with, like, in Alien, the alien's not actually dumb, but I think we're constantly led to believe that the alien is just animalistic. And here, I think that gets dispelled really quick. She is animalistic, but she's a smart, smart creature. And you don't mess with her. She will find a way to get you. But I'm sorry, Rachel, do you want to jump in?
Well, I was going to say, I've noticed that a lot of times when there's an effect that uses blue screen, it looks about a zillion times worse if you're watching it on an HD screen. And that's just kind of like the nature of the beast, because I've noticed it. Well, and I mean, plus it looked really super impressive, you know, the first time I watched it. Now after you've seen a lot more better special effects, then you can really start picking things out. But I don't know. I still love Aliens, and I will still watch it every time it is on. And as far as really kind of classic action movies go, I think it's doing just fine, and in some ways it's even aged better than, like, you know, Die Hard to a certain extent. Because I would consider this movie, I mean, it's got the horror element of the aliens in it, but it is very much, it is an action movie, and it is a military focused action movie. And, you know, something we were talking about earlier before we started recording is that it has, you know, so it can be read as like a sort of a revisionist Vietnam action movie.
I do want to just say really quick that if you would like to send hate mail about the Die Hard comments that were just made, do not email skiffyandfanty@gmail.com. You can email Rachel directly.
Hey, all I can say is every Christmas I watch Die Hard, and I watch Die Hard 2, and every Christmas I'm just like, man, remember when airport security didn't suck?
fair. Well, Damien, do you want to jump in?
You know, this scene, okay, so a lot of the special effects in Aliens look a little dated. However, the scene where the aliens are coming out, when the Marines first go in to find the colonists, when they found their personal data transmitters, and they're locking on and they're going in, and you've got, you know, the aliens have created their hive, for lack of a better word. And when you see them start to come out of the walls, that still is phenomenal. But again, it's, you know, it's not a blue screen effect. It was, that scene is not dated. I don't think that the scene with the queen is, when we first see her and she's breathing and she lifts her head, that's not dated. I think a lot of the scenes where you see the various ships, that's where you get the dated effect.
It seems a weird choice because so much of the film, like, improves on the previous one. I mean, the aliens themselves move better. The sets are fine. They're good sets. They're well constructed.
Well, and they're very visually consistent with the first movie.
Absolutely, yeah. And I mean, we get that kind of macabre, like, underbelly, almost like a really creepy, slimy ant hive as we get deeper into the complex. So it seems really odd that where they would have the most difficulty would have been the ships, which I feel like, in terms of practical effects, should have been the easiest part.
Well, you remember, it's at that point, they did do the ships with practical effects. Those are all models, but you're still having to shoot a model and, you know, bring it into the film, particularly when, you know, it's one thing if you're doing like a model again, you know, like a space model, but you know, that was, I think Aliens was still old enough that you know, it wasn't going to look as good as, like, say, you know, when you got into Star Trek The Next Generation and they had, at that point, Visual Toaster to go in there and, like, digitally cut out a shape and insert the model into the film, basically.
Oh, okay.
So,
well, it was made in 1986, so the effects then were most likely top of the line.
Oh, yeah, no, I think they were top of the line for when it was made, yeah.
So, but because they relied so heavily on the effects, I think that, unfortunately, they don't necessarily hold up. Which is kind of scary, because think about the effects in a movie now, and in 20 years, are, you know, people going to be sitting around talking about how, wow.
Well, and you can, sorry. I was going to say, one thing to also think about the effects is when they look the best, and you'll notice this from Alien as well, is when it's like the model ship against a starscape.
Yeah, blackness, because you don't see the line that separates. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But even in Alien, where there's the shot where you've got the little shuttle moving away from the Nostromo, that does not look great when it's the shuttle, you know, kind of like the shuttle like moving against the Nostromo. You know, in an Aliens, when it looks the roughest is like, you know, when they're coming in through the sky or when they're in the refinery, because there's just like a lot of other stuff happening. So that was kind of the limitations they were working with at the time. And I mean, I remember when I first saw this movie, like in the 90s, it was fucking awesome, man.
It still is.
So, well, I mean, visual effects wise, it will forever be awesome because Ripley is awesome and I am going to be Vasquez's housewife. So. And actually,
last words, I love it. These are awesome. These effects are awesome. Those are the things I said about Mortal Kombat, which when you watch it now is absolutely fucking horrible.
Well, it wasn't that great of a movie to begin.
No, it was not that great. But in any case, why don't we jump in and kind of dig into maybe some of the other aspects of the film so that, you know, we aren't just ripping on what is one of my favorite films of all time.
I was going to say, can I talk about the android really quick?
Yes, please do.
Okay, so after having reviewed Alien first and then watched this movie, I have an all-new appreciation for Bishop as a character. Because, if nothing else, you know, he makes the kind of reference about, like, oh, that those models were kind of twitchy, because he doesn't know what's going on. He doesn't know why Ripley hates his face. But he also kind of implies that there's, like, some Isaac Asimov laws of robotics going on back there. But I already kind of liked him, even though you're like, well, he's an android and he's apparently programmed to be pretty nice. But when I gained this new appreciation for him is, you know, he did the exact same thing as the other android where he went through and he was like dissecting the facehugger and gaining an understanding of the aliens. And then Ripley goes up to him and says, after you're done with these, I want them all destroyed. And then what he does next is basically go, oh, well, the corporate weasel wanted me to freeze them. And what I kind of realize is in the context of Alien, where, you know, it's very potentially that android went nuts because he was given this kind of directive to deal with the xenomorphs and bring them back and all that. And now you have Bishop, who... what I'm guessing is if they're doing like a laws of robotics things, androids are also not supposed to disobey humans. So I kind of read it as Bishop being like, I really don't like what the weasel ordered me to do. And Ripley wants me to do something different. So I'm just going to quietly throw the weasel under the bus and let Ripley deal with him because she can.
Oh, the corporate weasel.
But that just made me love Bishop so much because I felt like it kind of subtly implied that he is, unlike the other android, he is like solidly on the side of humanity.
Yes, although I do believe that they were trying to do a little bit of callback to Alien and maybe try and, I hate to say trick the audience, because when he's dissecting the facehugger and... the other, the soldier whose name I can't remember, comes up and says, oh, nice pet you've got there. And Bishop says, you know, fascinating, isn't it? To give you a little bit of fear of, uh-oh, maybe he isn't such a good alien, you know, a good android.
Yeah.
Maybe, and I don't know that he necessarily handed the task of dealing with Carter Burke to Ripley. I think he was more so, well, this is what Burke said to do. And Burke works for the company. And so Bishop is a company robot. In some ways, the company mostly owns him. So if the company, the company sleazeball says, yeah, we're going to freeze these and take these back, he's sort of beholden to the company and by extension Burke to follow the orders.
But also remember a key fact though, that I got to get this. This has got to get out, Rachel. It's got to get out. Remember that Burke is not actually supposed to bring them back. He's been ordered by the company. We're assuming that he's correct and that he's been told by his company masters. But remember that Ripley tells him at least twice, right, that he can't get them through quarantine, right, which is why he devises the plot to infect people, to infect Ripley and Newt. So it's a very interesting fact that he's being told to do something that is essentially illegal, but that his directives are, of course, as you say, right, he's a corporate android. So therefore, his first instinct is essentially just to follow those orders, even though I think by the end he makes the right decision in realizing that those orders are bunk.
Okay, so...
But Rachel, go ahead.
The entire reason I actually did read it as Bishop kind of like winding Ripley up and sending her at the dude is actually because if he is basically owned by Wayland, if he was completely on board with this, he would have just lied to Ripley. And been like, oh yeah, sure. And then frozen them anyway, and she never would have known.
We're assuming that androids can lie?
They obviously can.
Well, but he's a different model. That's just, whatever. That's just
yeah, but that's kind of like me reading into Bishop, where I was just like, that would be kind of a fascinating little character thing that, you know, we'll never know because it's an internal process, but...
I do love Bishop, though, because he becomes one of the... Like, I think in Aliens, we get far more character growth for Ripley than we do in Alien. I think it's just because of the type of story we're dealing with. It's not necessarily a fault of Alien. Alien is just a more direct kind of plot. There's a monstrous alien thing. We gotta either not die from it or kill it. And so her character growth is somewhat limited by that. In this, I think we get so much character growth for Ripley... we get it through Bishop, right, because we already know there's a perfectly rational reason for her prejudice against androids, right? So we have to have that growth that she realizes she may be actually wrong about Bishop, and in a way, Bishop having to kind of prove himself, not necessarily on an intent on his part, but he does essentially do that. And by the end, he becomes, I don't know, like an uncle. I don't know. He doesn't really become like a father figure in the end. He's more like that cool uncle who, like, has a crazy lab. And so that's part of it. We also get Newt, right? We sort of have her kind of dealing in a way with, in the extended edition at least, dealing with the fact that she's been in cryosleep for 70-something odd years, so her daughter's actually lived and died. And so Newt becomes that mechanism for her to get that growth, right, of kind of dealing with the loss of her own child. We get her relationship with Hicks, which is deliberately, I think... a withdrawn romantic relationship, but I think it's 57 years, as Damien says in the notes. It's fairly obvious though that there's a romantic interest there. I really appreciate that the film doesn't actually make that like it doesn't make it at the end like, oh, we survived and now we'll make out and have like babies, right? Because they could have done that. I appreciate that they didn't do that, but it's heavily implied that that's what's happening. So I feel like that's what's great about this particular film is there's so much growth for her as a character. And I love that because she is just, honestly, like, if you elicit top 10 greatest science fiction characters of all time, I mean, she would be probably my number one.
Mm-hmm. I would agree.
I love Ripley. I think Ripley is such a complex, fascinating character. So, but Damon, did you want to maybe jump in?
Well, it's interesting. If you watch the special edition of Aliens, there's a scene toward the end where Ripley and Hicks exchange first names.
That's
yes.
Right.
Yes.
So it was cut because it sort of, I think Cameron thought it, you know, affected the tension. It was very, you know, it was a very brief scene. It was before she's going, before Ripley is going to find and save Newt. And it was just, you know, that moment and, you know, they exchange names and she says, you know, something to the effect of, you know, I'll be back soon. And he's like, or see you soon. He's like, you know, see you soon, Ellen. So that seeing each other as something a little more.
Like, yeah, as people rather than soldier and civilian contractor, I guess. It does, and I disagree with Cameron that that takes away the tension. I think that adds to it because it makes that whole scene even more personal because I think what the film, one of the things that Aliens does is it is kind of playing on the idea of the nuclear family, which is kind of what gets created by the end of the film. It's kind of a surrogate one. And I think that's necessary in that scene. She's saving Newt, but she's essentially saving their surrogate daughter.
Mm-hmm.
So I love that. I thought that was really touching. But I also like that their relationship's actually one of respect versus just like, you've got boobs and I've got a penis, so we'll, like, that's our relationship. Yay.
Mm-hmm.
So, as opposed to Hudson, who is a whiny bastard.
I'm on an express elevator to hell going down.
Game
Four
over,
more
man.
Weeks and I was out.
Game over, man. Game over.
I was going to say, that was the moment that you knew that he was going to die horribly.
But he bucks up at the end.
Although, yes, when the alien grabs him, he's like, oh, you want some of this too? Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's pulling him down and he's shooting it. So he does. In the end, he comes through.
He ceases to be the coward he has spent most of the film. But the irony, like, this side character gets a kind of sort of character arc. And I love that. So many characters do get arcs, though. Even the queen gets an arc.
Mm-hmm.
Right, she starts as being just the alien monstrosity who's just laying eggs, and then she's like, no, pissed off mama, who's going to get vengeance for the fact that her young have been killed. It's a very small arc, a very simple arc, but it is an arc.
Mm-hmm.
Which is another thing I love that this film does really wonderfully, is it gives even the monsters characterization, so they're just not monsters. There are still monsters, they're just monsters with personality. God, it's such a weird way to put it. Okay, so we got to kind of get to final thoughts because we're at almost an hour now, which sucks. But any last things that people would like to bring up? But we'll start with you, Damien. Last things.
You know, what's interesting is I like the character arc of Ripley in Alien better. And most of it is, it's in her face and in her tone of voice. You know, in the very beginning of, and I know we've already talked about Alien, but oh well. You know, they're sitting and they're trying to figure out where they are, and she's like, that's not our system. And Lambert's like, I know that. And then, you know, she's in the ship kind of giving Parker and Brett a hard time. And then, you know, she's, in Alien, she's competent, but she doesn't break. She grows stronger, and when she sees Parker and Lambert's bodies, her face shows fear, this realization that she's the only one left, and then this determination. You know, I think that the arc continues in Aliens with, you know, her losing her child, and finding out that her child, you know, has passed away as an old woman, but she's still gone. So she sees Newt as, you know, the surrogate child, and yes, and Hicks as, you know, a surrogate partner, equal slash partner. And yes, they have a little bit of flirtation, but it is, their relationship is more one of respect. But I think that the character arc as a whole, it's easy to look at it in a larger way in Aliens because of Newt and Hicks, but I think there is just as significant growth emotionally for Ripley in Alien.
That's fair. That's a fair point. Rachel, last thoughts.
Okay. I will always love Ripley as a character just because I think in Alien, yeah, she's got that, like, that determination, and she gets the shit scared out of her constantly, but she still keeps going. And plus, she is very resourceful, where, you know, particularly in Alien, you know, she wins by being clever and resourceful and determined rather than being, like, you know, some kind of giant gun-wielding badass. And she has, you know, she goes and does the gun-wielding badass thing in Aliens. But, the last thing I watched before I hopped on the podcast was the, you know, her going down the elevator to go try to get Newt back. And you can even tell in that there's this amazing transformation she sort of undergoes in the elevator, where she just gets, you know, gets stripped down and puts the weapons on. And then just kind of you see her having this moment where she's like, I'm so fucking scared. And then the door opens and she's like, deep breath, I'm going to go. And I mean, Sigourney Weaver is just amazing anyway. So just, I love the character so much. She's just a phenomenal character, and I'm so glad that Ripley is a woman.
Yes. You know, I will say, I prefer her using her smarts,
yes,
you know, relying on her smarts in Alien as opposed to all of the weapons in Aliens. And I know that that Sigourney Weaver actually had issues with all of the weapons in Aliens.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I'm just going to say one thing, though, about the weapons. It is by far my favorite scene in Aliens, when it's just Ripley, is that look she gives the alien queen when one of the eggs opens after she sort of established this rule, right? She said, like, I will burn all your eggs if you fuck with me and Newt. You're going to let me walk out. Like, she, all with that word. She doesn't say this. She just does it with actions.
Yeah, she cocks her head to the side.
And then she cocks her head to the side like that and gives that attitude. And I love that. I'm like, because what she's essentially saying is, you fuck her. And she just lights it on fire. I love that moment. It is so just perfect, because there's no words. There's no words at all. It's all just silent. And I just love it. Well, not silent, but you know what I mean. Like, there's no, mm-hmm, nobody's speaking any language. They're like doing almost like a monstrous interpretive dance. Yeah. It really is, though. But okay, so my final thoughts is, I'll just be super quick, and then we got to move on to grading, and then have Damian just mention any of her fancy dancy projects she'd like to say. As I would just say that I agree that Alien is stronger film structurally, editing, and all those kinds of things. I will say, though, that I always have a stronger preference for Aliens, and I don't know what it is. I think it's maybe because I find it more personable. Or it's because I just freaking love the queen. I just, the when the queen shows up, and just that, all of those, the final 15 minutes of that movie are just, they're just some of the most amazing things. Like when she fights her in the loader, and they have the mech fight, like I could just imagine, like, you know, my dreams coming true at that moment. It's like, I'm going to get like a giant alien fighting a mech, and I got my dreams. I love those scenes. I think it's great. I know the line that she says when she says, get away from her, you bitch, is somewhat controversial because of the language that's used. But I still love it, because I just, in that moment, it feels like the right thing that she would have said. So that's all I'll say. But in any case, yeah, I love both films, and I suspect we both do. So Damian, what would you give both films in terms of a grade?
Alien gets an A+. Aliens gets an A.
Fair enough. Rachel?
And I'm going to actually be the reverse, because I'm going to give Aliens an A+ and Alien an A, mostly because I will watch Aliens whenever, and I just can't do that with Alien, because it's a really well put together movie, but I don't like horror.
You don't like wetting yourself.
That's, no.
I will... Okay, so my grade would probably, if I were thinking about in terms of quality, I would go with what Damien's suggested: A+ for Alien, A for Aliens. But if you're asking me in terms of preference, it's what Rachel said, and that's just because I've got more of a nostalgic feel. So but quality standards, right? A+ for Alien. On that note, we got to make sure to have Damian say a little bit about, you have a book that came out this year, if I recall correctly. It came out last month, I believe.
Yes. Sing Me Your Scars. It's a collection of short fiction. Came out from Apex Publications. Available at Amazon, Barnes & Noble. Probably the easiest way for someone who's listening, if they're interested, my website is DamianAngelicaWalters.com. And I have a page for the collection, which is, again, called Sing Me Your Scars.
Excellent. And is there anything else you're working on that you'd like to let people know about?
Let's see. I have in January of 2016, I have a novel coming out called Paper Tigers, which is, I would call it a literary horror novel, similar to my, in tone and style to my short fiction, which is, I guess, dark fantasy, dark contemporary fantasy slash horror.
Okay.
And then I'm just working on a whole bunch of other short fiction that, you know, for different anthologies that have been solicited by several editors. That's pretty much it.
Well, excellent. Well, thank you so much, Damien, for, well, honestly, it was a treat because you got to talk about, like, your favorite movies.
Yes, very much so. It was fantastic.
Well, thanks so much for taking the time to talk with us about it.
Well, thank you for having me.
Absolutely. And thank you, Rachel, for being my co-host.
You're welcome, citizen.
And on that note, everybody, awkward ending and scene. If you would like to send us hate mail on this episode or any other topics we've covered, you can do so in a number of ways. You can send us an email.
SkiffyandFanty@gmail.com.
You can send us a tweet.
@SkiffyandFanty.
Leave a comment on the blog.
SkiffyandFanty.com.
Go to Google+.
Shawnee Jen.
And or Facebook.
The Skiffy and Fanty Show. Our intro music comes from Time Flux by Revolution Void. You can check them out at freemusicarchive.org.
You're just another weak human afraid to face death.
I pass in your general direction.
France, different planet.
The Force will be with you. Always.
This is Ripley, last survivor of the Nostromo. Signing off.